Judge Andrew Napolitano has been on the show many times over the last few years. We became friends after we talked about his book, Constitutional Chaos, in 2004. And now he's got a follow-up to it called The Constitution in Exile, How the Federal Government Has Seized Power by Rewriting the Supreme Law of the Land. And as always, I appreciate him taking a little time out from his duties as the legal consultant to the Fox News Channel to join me here on KMOX. Judge Knapp, how are you today?
Oh, I'm fine, Paul. How are you? It's always a pleasure.
Always a pleasure to have you on the show. Before we talk about some of the issues in your book, here's one that's kind of related to it, and it is a two-word phrase that, as a man who sat on the bench for a long time, may or may not drive you crazy, but I've never asked you about it. And the two-word phrase is activist judges. You're a judge? Well, what does that mean? And when you hear it, does it drive you nuts?
Well, it does drive me nuts because it just depends who's saying it. You know, one person's activist judge is another person's hero.
Right.
If the legislature enacts a statute that makes certain speech, certain political speech, illegal, a heroic judge would strike it down. Though to the members of the legislature, that judge would be an activist.
Mm-hmm.
If the school board wants a raise and the Board of Education says no, and a federal judge raises taxes so that the members of the school board can have raised salaries, most people would consider that an activist judge. Now, these are real examples that I'm giving you. I'm not making them up. So it really depends upon where you stand. In my own worldview, judges should uphold the natural law, the rights that we have by virtue of our humanity, rights to speech and religion and travel and privacy, and rights to be free from unwarranted and unreasonable restraint, the right to be left alone. These are rights that judges should uphold, and if the legislature interferes with them, the legislature's acts should be shot down. But when judges replace themselves with the legislature, like deciding what tax rates should be, then judges shouldn't do that, and they are activists, and they do need to be restrained.
And as you know, legislatures from the Congress in Washington, D.C., to the state capitals like here in Jefferson City, there are bills that are moving through the various houses that are trying to restrict what judges can even rule on. Essentially, it's the legislators saying, look, if we make it a law, that's it, which is exactly against the checks and balances that the Constitution gave us, right?
Oh, absolutely. That will create the tyranny of the majority. You know, there's a school of thought that almost all people in the government belong to called positivism. And this school of thought says that whatever laws the government makes are valid laws. There is no higher law. There is nothing that can invalidate it. The majority is always right. I mean, under that theory, Hitler was elected, and the Nazis lawfully enacted all sorts of horrific laws.
Yep.
Opposite to this is the theory that runs through my book, which is called the natural law, that our rights are natural, that they come to us by virtue of our humanity, which is a gift from God.
Right.
And the government cannot interfere with those rights. The government can't enact a law denying Paul Harris free speech. The only way you can lose your right to speak freely is if you are convicted by a jury of your peers of having interfered with somebody else's rights.
But what I find so amusing in all of this is that many of the same people who are always crying we need less government and we need limited government are also some of the same people behind pushing these kind of laws into action.
Because the government is filled in both parties, no matter what they tell you they believe, with big government people. Very few people have run for office wanting to shrink the government. Thomas Jefferson did. Barry Goldwater did. Ronald Reagan did in 1980. But Grover Cleveland did. But with those exceptions, and there are a few people in the Congress, Congressman Ron Paul, and there's about a dozen or so members of the House. With those few exceptions, everybody in the government in both parties wants to increase the power of the government because they want the government to get involved in more of our lives because it gives them more power. They can call themselves compassionate conservatives, but they're not. It's just their version of big government. I mean, George Bush and the Republicans in Congress, who've run the federal government for the past 6 years, have spent more money than all preceding governments combined. We spend today over $1 billion a day in debt service. That's just paying the interest on the money they've borrowed for all this spending. We borrowed over $1 trillion from a government that hates us and wishes us ill, the communist Chinese. So this is big government run wild that we're talking about. No matter what they tell you, their actions belie their words.
Talking to Judge Andrew Napolitano here on the Paul Harris Show on KMOX. His new book is called The Constitution in Exile. And in it, he says, quote, "Do we still have a constitution? Today, the federal government recognizes no limitations on its power. It has utterly rejected the idea, integral to the Constitution, that it is one of limited powers, carefully and precisely delegated. Today, the federal government does whatever it wants to do." In writing that, are you thinking about how the federal government has overruled things like medical marijuana and assisted suicide laws that the states and its citizens have passed, and yet bureaucrats in Washington didn't like, and so they tried to beat it down?
Oh, absolutely. And there are hundreds of examples, Paul, in this book. If you wanted to raise the drinking age in the state of Missouri from 18 to 21, let's say it was still at 18, and you went to the legislature and said, "Hey, guys and gals, if you raise the drinking age, I'll pay some of your bills for you." Well, you'd be indicted for attempted bribery. If you said to the same legislature, "If you don't raise that drinking age, I'm going to take some money away from you," you'd be indicted for attempted extortion. Guess what? The Constitution says the states shall regulate alcohol. So if the Congress doesn't like the way the states are regulating alcohol, the Congress goes to the states and says, "Raise the limit to 21, and we will pave those federal highways in your states. Keep the limit at 18, and that money that you think is coming for the highways, we won't even give it to you." That's bribery and extortion, plain and simple, and the Congress gets away with it because it doesn't recognize the limitations imposed upon it by the Constitution, because it is filled with busybodies and do-gooders who love power and think they know what's best for us better than we know for ourselves, because they utterly disregard the notion that we are a country of 50 separate sovereign states. Every state in the Union but South Dakota went along with this bribery extortion scheme. South Dakota challenged it, went all the way to the Supreme Court, and they lost 5-4. Supreme Court said, if you don't want the government strings, don't accept the government's money. Bingo! This lets the federal government legislate by bribery and legislate by extortion using tax dollars in areas that the Constitution forbids the federal government to legislate in.
So the Supreme Court ruled wrongly.
Absolutely, the Supreme Court ruled wrong. And the Supreme Court just went along with it because they bought the notion that this is what the majority wants done with their tax dollars, that it's better to have paved highways than unpaved highways. That's not the point. It's better to have states deciding what to do with their money and pave their highways, how the drinking age should work, how alcohol should be distributed. Why? Because that's what the Constitution says.
All right, now in the book, you expand that notion to education. You go after things like No Child Left Behind and other things which came down from Washington to the local school districts through the states, etc., and you say that that is along those same lines. But I would ask you, Judge, what is wrong with us having a national educational standard? Yes, we are 50 states, but we're also 300 million people, members of the United States of America. Why not unite us in that goal?
Because the Constitution gives specific limited powers to the federal government. It doesn't empower the federal government to address every problem that is national. It only empowers the federal government to address every problem that is federal. National means the problem exists in more than one state. Federal means it's a problem integral to the nation as a nation. It goes to the security of the republic. It goes to one of the reasons for which we formed a republic, and education is not one of them. The whole Department of Education is unconstitutional because the Constitution doesn't authorize it. And if the people wanted a federal Department of Education, they would have to amend the Constitution. Did the Congress wait for that? Of course not. Did the President wait for that? Of course not. They spend hundreds of billions of dollars in areas in which they have no authority whatsoever.
Speaking of the president, you go after the Bush administration pretty hard here, and particularly on these issues. I'm sure it hasn't made you many more friends there at Fox News Channel, but you go after them particularly because they are the ones who have been in power for the last 6 years. But they're not the only violators of this, are they?
No, they're not the only violators of this. Look, people that work for the government have two things in common. They are basically lazy, and they love to exercise power. And this happens at all levels of government. People do not run, as I said earlier, with the exception of the few names I ticked off earlier.
And by the way, I'm glad you mentioned Ron Paul, because he's a guy who does not have a national profile and should, because some of his speeches are pure brilliance.
Ron Paul is the greatest member of Congress. Ron Paul is the most courageous member of Congress, and Ron Paul understands the Constitution better than anybody on Capitol Hill. He understands that the federal government is one of limited powers. Ron Paul has proposed legislation that would require, before the Congress votes on anything, that the thing they vote on be found in the Constitution. Do you know that that legislation, the Republican leadership is afraid to bring that legislation to a vote? They're afraid it might pass, and they're afraid they won't be able to find in the Constitution authority for all the things they want to do.
Yeah.
You know, they just run roughshod on the notion of federalism. Why do we have federalism? Because the founders, Jefferson, who wrote the Declaration of Independence, and Madison, who wrote the Constitution, feared big government. They feared too much government in one place at one time. That's why they have it diffused, diffused among the states, and then diffused within the federal government. The more the Congress tramples state borders, the more uniformity the Congress enforces, and the more we go along with it like a nation of sheep, the more power there is in Washington, D.C., the more centralized it is, the easier it is for some group or faction or individual to get control of it, the less freedom individuals have.
I think part of the problem is that a lot of Americans don't know what's in the Constitution, don't know that the Constitution and particularly the Bill of Rights are there to set up our government and tell the government what it can do and to tell us what our rights were, whether the government said they were our rights or not, as you pointed out. And I don't know if you know about a friend of mine by the name of Chris Bliss, who has started a campaign to get Bill of Rights monuments in the 50 state capitals in this country. You know, like the Ten Commandments monuments started that
whole thing
in Alabama with Judge
Roy
Moore. Wouldn't it be great to be able to go to a state capital or to the largest city in the state, like St. Louis is, and get a monument showing people, A, what the first 10 amendments to the Constitution are?
I think it would be fabulous, Paul, because people forget. Everybody that works for the government, from a president to a janitor, from a governor to a state trooper, from a mayor to the guy in the water department, takes an oath to uphold the Constitution. And the Constitution says things like, Congress shall make no law abridging the freedom of speech. Congress does it all the time. You can't get a search warrant unless you go to a judge. Congress is now letting FBI agents write their own search warrants. The people should be reminded of the liberties that are guaranteed in the Constitution. They don't come from the Constitution. They come from our humanity. The Constitution prevents the government from interfering with them. Yes, people should see the Bill of Rights, but people should see the Declaration of Independence, which has things in it like our rights to life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness are inalienable. They can't be taken away from us. When the government doesn't respect those rights, it is the duty of the people to alter and abolish it. I mean, The Constitution, the Bill of Rights, and the Declaration of Independence are the law of the land. It's not just some puffy thing that Jefferson and Madison wrote. And yes, the people should be reminded of that.
Absolutely.
Oh, you're great. I could talk to you all afternoon.
Well, thank you. I know I've only got a few minutes before you've got to run back to do something on the air. So let me just ask you about domestic spying, which you and I have talked about before. But the Patriot Act and the domestic spying and all of that sort of stuff are still very, very controversial. And it doesn't seem like there's been any movement in this towards the side of freedom. What's wrong there? What's not happening that needs to?
Well, what's not happening, first of all, is an awareness on the part of the members of Congress who are responsible for upholding the Constitution along with the President of their willingness and ability to do their job. They're afraid to take him on domestic spying, even though his popularity is very low now.
Yeah.
They were completely boondoggled on the Patriot Act because they bought the nonsense that if we give up some freedom, we'll be safer. In reality, we're just less free. We're never safer. What's also happening is there are no cases making their way to federal court yet. When the government starts prosecuting people on the basis of information it obtains from illegal wiretaps, then the illegal wiretaps will come under scrutiny in court, and then judges will start declaring it unconstitutional, and that'll make its way to the Supreme Court. When the government starts prosecuting people for information it obtains via the Patriot Act, via self-written search warrants, then that will be challenged, and judges will start declaring that unconstitutional, and that will make its way to the Supreme Court. Unfortunately, these things take time. George Bush will be a private citizen before these matters make their way to the Supreme Court, but they will. And hopefully the court will do the right thing and uphold the Constitution and the natural rights of every individual.
And along the way, of course, there'll be more screaming about activist judges. Two more quick things.
And more Republicans will be throwing copies of my book at me.
I was going to ask you, what kind of reaction do you get? Because you go pretty hard after
People, look at the people that have endorsed it. Rush Limbaugh, about as strong a conservative Republican as there is.
Yep.
Sean Hannity in the same category. Bill O'Reilly, a little bit more populist. Alan Combs, a moderate Democrat. Nat Hentoff, a hard left civil libertarian.
Yep.
I'm able to unite a disparate group of people in endorsing the book. But yeah, my friends in the Republican leadership are not happy with me, but I'm not happy with what they're doing to the Constitution.
I understand that completely, and I'm glad that you're standing up and speaking out in favor of course you're in favor of it, but I'm glad that you're making people aware of what's going on here and how this most important document in the history of humanity is torn and shredded and ignored by the people who are charged to uphold it. I love the fact that all of these people at some point had to raise their right hand and swear to uphold the Constitution, and that's the last time they ever probably said the word Constitution.
That's the last time they ever saw it.
The book is called Constitution in Exile, How the Federal Government Has Seized Power by Rewriting the Supreme Law of the Land by Judge Andrew Napolitano. It's a great follow-up to his other book, Constitutional Chaos, and it's always a pleasure having you on the show.
Pleasure's mine. Until the next time, Paul. Thank you.
Judge Knapp, I hope to talk to you soon. This is the Paul Harris Show on News Talk 1120 KMOX.